Hello and welcome everyone to the July 2010 monthly program at the Animal Communicator Forum. I'm Netta Wattels, the forum moderator, and I welcome each of you to our call today. Throughout our monthly program series in 2010, we continue to explore aspects of the field of animal communication. Each of our speakers shares her special viewpoints, gifts, and skills, and speaks from her heart. Our mission is to make animal communication as natural as breathing. I hope that each of you will find a way to incorporate animal communication into your daily lives. Today, I'm delighted to welcome Nancy Windhart to the Animal Communicator Forum. Nancy has been passionate about animals since she was a child and delights in understanding how animals see, feel, and experience the world. Through her study of music, Nancy became aware that communication can take a wide variety of forms. This insight has helped her to expand her perspectives on communicating with animals. Nancy has worked with many rescued animals in a volunteer capacity and also through animal communication. These experiences provide the basis for her program today. Her topic is Animal Communication for Shelter and Rescue Workers, What the Animals Teach Us. Let's all take a moment now to connect with our heart centers. Take a deep breath in, everyone. And exhale slowly, telling yourself to relax, moving yourself gently into your heart, feeling yourself settling into your seat, feeling yourself connecting to the earth, who is our mother and the mother of all the earth kingdoms. Imagine, see, feel, allow your heart center to open like a beautiful flower. And now from your heart, please join me in welcoming Nancy Windhart to the Animal Communicator Forum. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Netta. Thank you so much for that beautiful introduction and the heart-centering meditation, connecting with each other. That's very beautiful. Thank you so much. I thought I would just go ahead and start with why I chose this topic. And knowing that we have many people on this call, probably most of you have some involvement with rescue work, working with shelters, rescue animals, that kind of thing. And I know that we have people of a variety of backgrounds with regard to animal communication on this call. Some people are newer to animal communication, and we have experienced professional communicators with us as well. So I welcome all of you, and thank you for joining me here today, and thank you, Netta, for this opportunity. I started off my animal communication journey, really, as an adult with my work with rescue and shelter animals. And so I really feel that it's because of those animals that I'm here today and that I'm able to do the work that I do in my practice. And so it's something that's very near and dear to my heart. Like many people, I communicated easily telepathically with animals as I was a child, and then lost that ability, forgot it, buried it, put it away as I grew up through my older teenage years and into my young adulthood. And when I was in my mid-20s, I adopted a very beautiful dog from a shelter, and I began doing some volunteer work at that shelter. And that, I would say, was really the beginning of my reawakening to my telepathic abilities and to animal communication in general. And I learned so much from the animals at that shelter. This was a very large shelter in the inner city in Ohio, and we had hundreds of dogs and cats who came through the shelter. And I worked there for many years, and that was one of the biggest experiences in terms of the animals really, really teaching me about telepathic communication and helping me to recover my telepathic abilities. There was an animal communicator who volunteered with the shelter animals, and she came and I watched her work. And that was really what flipped the light on for me after the years of dormancy. So I will always be grateful to her. I just thought I'd share with you briefly some of my other experiences with rescue. After I left Ohio, I worked in Michigan, and I started a feral cat trap-neuter release program at my workplace. And that was a great deal of fun, a lot of work, and I learned, again, tremendous amount from the feral cats about who they are and the work that they're doing on the planet and what they need, what they want, what they desire, how best to help them. I also worked briefly with the Humane Society of the United States team that went to Louisiana after Hurricane Katrina and worked in that post-hurricane crisis situation for a while and learned a great deal from the animals there and from the other people that I worked with. And then I've just done a lot of work over the years with farm animal rescues and my local groups. And here in Arizona, I continue to volunteer as an animal communicator for some of our local rescues in the state. And I find at this point in my life that is my most useful service that I can provide is to help rescue groups with animal communication services. And so I donate those services regularly as part of my practice as a way of paying it back and paying it forward for the tremendous help and service the many rescue animals have given to me in terms of what they've taught me. And most of my own animal family also comes from a rescue or shelter background, and so they are probably the ones who have taught me the deepest lessons about what that means and their journeys and how best to help them. And so that's what led me to create this topic for today, because I know that so many people who are interested in animal communication and who are also involved in rescue work want to be able to combine those things and really serve the animals in the best way possible and understand them and help them. And, you know, through my experiences, I also, and not only the lessons I learned from the animals were so important about respect and love and healing and forgiveness and the million other things that they've taught me, but I also learned about the tremendous toll that rescue work can take on rescue workers and can be tremendously challenging. It can feel overwhelming at times. It can feel never-ending. It can feel that no matter what we do, it's never enough. The tide of suffering, it seems to not end. And I'd like to share with you what I've learned from the animals about all of that in terms of their purposes and also in terms of how we can best help ourselves and help them. So I'm so thrilled to be able to share some of the tools that I've learned over the years from the animals, and I've got four or five things that I call tools that can really be helpful. And I'm going to go through them one at a time, and I will welcome the opportunity to answer your questions. And so at some point I'll pause, and Netta can handle the question-asking protocol, but definitely I want to address any questions that you have all brought to this program today.
You going to talk about tools first, or are you going to talk about the animal perspectives? Because I can, as you were talking about all these lessons they've taught you, I'm just wondering, are there common themes, regardless of where the animals live? Are there common themes about their perspective?
You know, there are, although what I've learned, and I guess this is one of the tools that I'm going to talk about in a minute, what I've learned is that and I know that you experience this all the time in your practice too, Netta, every animal is unique, every animal's perspective is very individual. And they've taught me some big things, and I've kind of integrated those into some of the tools that I want to share. So, perhaps it would be best to start with that. Is that all right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Good.
Go ahead.
Perfect. The first thing that I learned from the animals, and I learned this early on, I learned this as a child and then relearned it in my work with particularly some of the animals in the large shelter that I worked at, was the tool of cultivating the ability to be with them in what I call deep presence. And what this means to me is being able to be with the animals without needing to do anything to help them, to fix them, to take any action at that time, but just to be willing to be with them. One of the ways, it's very, very simple, that you can do this, and I know probably most of you are doing this already, but is to just sit quietly with them. And the animals will help you. When humans come to animals with that deep quietness and just are with them without needing to touch them or hold them or treat them or help them, but just sit with them, the animals go, oh, this feels so fantastic. And, you know, if you work at a shelter, you can just go sit in the dog runs. You can sit in the cat rooms, you know, wherever you happen to be with your own animal family. Really getting out of our human mode, which so often has to do with doing rather than being, and just being with the animals. This is where your relationship with them and the possibility for heart-to-heart communication with them will unfold. Animals love it if you sit with them outside on the earth, if that is possible. It's a fantastic way to really connect in and be present with them. Reminded of something that Penelope Smith said years ago that I will never forget, that the whales actually told her to tell the people to connect to the animals through their feet on the ground. Sitting on the earth, feeling that strength and grounding through the earth with your animal friends will do wonders for opening up your ability to start to feel and sense and hear them telepathically. The other thing that can really help with cultivating the deep presence is any kind of spiritual practice that teaches stillness and awareness. And that can be really anything that you're comfortable with and that works for you. For some people, it's meditation. For some people, it's a practice of contemplative prayer. It may be a more physical practice like yoga or tai chi. It may be, you know, your spiritual practice may be walking in the woods every morning with your dog, sitting underneath of a tree, feeling the earth. Whatever your practice is that helps you to still your mind and teach you that deep presence in the moment, this can be tremendously helpful for all of us. And again, you'll often find, and I know I've experienced this, I know many of my colleagues talk about this and many of my students, that when you get into that place, in whatever spiritual practice you're using, whether it's meditating or whatever, the animals have a tendency to just flock around you. That is a wonderful opportunity for connecting with them in that way. The next tool, and this is what we were talking about just now with Netta, that the animals taught me and they continue to teach me with every consultation I do with them, is that it's so important to treat each being as an individual with her own perceptions, understandings, her own spiritual journey, her own physical history, all of that, and to recognize that each animal responds differently to difficult situations. And, you know, so often in rescue work and in shelter work, we work with animals who have been traumatized in one way or another through abuse, through neglect, through, you know, any number of experiences that they can have. And what I've learned is that not all animals will respond to those things in the same way. And I have a couple of examples that I'd like to share with you about that, because they both have really taught me a lot about this. I did a consultation recently with a cat who was awaiting adoption at a shelter that I volunteer my services with. And this cat's person had been brutally murdered while she was home, so in the home, and so she had witnessed the murder. And so the volunteers were understandably concerned about her and called me to work with her. And I didn't know what to expect before the consultation, you know, what she was going to say, what her perspective, what her experiences would be, what kind of healing she might need. And I was amazed to discover that this cat had a very matter-of-fact and deep understanding of the circumstances that had happened with her former person and what that experience had been, what her purpose was in all of that. She was very accepting. She was not nearly as traumatized as one might think. She was very much in the present moment and ready to start her new life. She described to me exactly the kind of new family she wanted. And as it turned out, she called them in, I think within a couple of weeks of the consultation. The family that she wanted had found her, and she had begun her new life. And so she taught me that, you know, it was a really wonderful example of how we can't assume anything about how an animal might respond to even the most horrible circumstance. It's so important to ask them what their perspective is, ask them what they need, ask them how we can help, ask them what help they might need, if any. So this was a case where it was a very, very different thing than what may have been expected. And the other example that I wanted to share with you is from my own animal family. I live with two Afghan hounds who came into my life 2 years ago, and they were seven at the time and came through rescue. And they are siblings, they're brother and sister, and so they had spent their entire life previous to coming to me together and had experienced difficult things in the time before they came to be with me. And what I've learned from my life with them is that they, even though they're, you know, they experienced the same situations, they are completely different beings in how they have handled that. They've had different emotional and physical effects, and their responses have been very, very different from each other. Some similarities, but in general, it's been very, very individual for them. And so they have reinforced that concept for me of really treating each animal individually and not assuming anything. I wrote an article which is up on the Animal Communicator Forum website, if you haven't read it yet, about one of my dog friends, Trixie, and her spiritual journey. And I won't repeat that story here, but that if you haven't read that and you're interested in another example of this kind of experience, you can read that article. The next tool that I feel is tremendously important is for us to do our own healing. And the animals, again, have shown me time and time again that when we work on our own pain and on our own healing, it not only helps us, but it helps them, and it helps our work with them. Often, you know, it's really not possible to be a human without having some pain and some wounding. It's just part of the human experience. It's part of what we come here to do, and I don't think there's a person on the planet who's not experienced some kind of wounding on some level. And often those of us who work in rescue situations, myself included, are healing our own wounds, whether we're aware of it or not. I really believe that the more aware of our own wounding we are, the better we can serve the animals. When we can do our own healing work and face our own pain, you'll be able to help the animals from a much clearer place. There's sometimes a human tendency to project our own issues, our own pain, our own stuff onto the animals, and that doesn't really help them. Sometimes, definitely, they mirror for us what's going on, and we can have similar issues with the animals that we work with or the animals that we live with. That happens commonly. But it also happens that we put things onto animals that may not be there. It may be our own stuff. The more of our own healing work we can do in facing that and looking at it, the more effective we'll be. And so all of us are at different places with that kind of journey, but I just encourage everyone to take the best care of yourself that you can, particularly if you're working in a high-stress rescue, you know, situation. Make sure that you take care of your physical body. Make sure that you take care of your emotional and psychological and spiritual bodies and get the help that you need. You know, and it's also coming to me to share with you at this time that my belief and my perception, my understanding is that on the planet right now, we have a tremendous opportunity for accelerated healing. I know those of you who are working professionally in this field have probably noticed this in your work, as have I, that the energy is just really accelerated right now. Animals and people are able to heal much more quickly, much more rapidly, it seems like, than ever before. And so whatever you can do to help yourself in that way, whether it's your spiritual practices, doing something like Reiki, other energy work, I'll be talking a little bit more about Reiki in a minute, you know, other healing arts, spiritual counseling, psychotherapy, you know, whatever you need to take care of it, focus your own healing on your own healing. And what the animals have shown me is that actually each time one of us heals, it helps the whole to heal. So you healing your own pain directly has an impact on helping the animals to heal from their pain and from their wounding. We're all connected. It's a circle. And each of us who does our own personal work is also assisting every other being on the planet to heal and to grow. So I'm feeling that this might, I have a couple of other things to mention, but Ned, I'm feeling that this may be an appropriate place to pause for questions. What do you think?
Sounds good to me. Do you want to pause right now?
Sure.
Okay. So we're open for some questions. To ask a question, you need to unmute your line. And to do that, you press star 6 on your telephone keypad. And then please give your first name and where you're from. And we'd be happy to entertain your question. Nancy would be delighted. So star 6 will unmute your line if you have a question that you'd like to ask right now. Doesn't see anybody, but sometimes folks are shy and they need a moment to get their thoughts together.
Nana, this is Rachel from Wyoming.
Hi, Rachel. Yes.
Hi.
Ed.
She had mentioned something about when she was talking to feral cats about what their purpose is and how they felt about things, and I would like to start a feral TNR program, so I was just wanting to get Nancy's thoughts on that.
Sure. Thank you for asking that. Yeah, boy, feral cats are wonderful, wonderful beings. And as you know, if you're interested in working with them, they're very different than our domesticated cat friends. One of the things that the feral cats really taught me a lot about is that many of them are doing very, very particular work with the earth herself. And so it is critically important to most of the ones, at least that I have communicated with, that they be allowed to continue to do that in their outdoor locations wherever they are. And for those of you who aren't familiar with the abbreviation TNR, it's trap, neuter, release, and it's a way of working with feral cats where they are spayed and neutered, but then re-released into their environment to continue to live as wild cats. And most TNR programs also include arrangement for shelter if necessary, depending on the climate where they're living, and also food and water, again, depending on what their access is. But it's often, you know, people will set up feeding stations and little shelters and that kind of thing. That was probably the biggest thing I learned, and I learned the hard way from a few feral cats about how difficult it is when people try to help them to become domesticated. And with feral cats, there's a window of opportunity when the kittens are very young where they can be domesticated. I have talked with feral kittens who, for whatever reason, either were not gotten in that window when they're very young, or were not, you know, really were not able to cross the line into domestication. And I've actually experienced feral cats being tremendously angry at the idea that people could take them and try to help them to become domesticated cats. And so that's something to really be aware of. Again, it's not every single feral cat, but in general, I've found that the feral cats definitely prefer to stay in their communities. They prefer to stay outdoors on the earth. And, you know, definitely I believe in, because of the tremendous overpopulation problem that we have in our world, that spaying and neutering is a good thing, and that helps them in the long run. Also that responsible TNR programs that include helping the cats with food and shelter, the cats really, really appreciate that. So, Rachel, does that answer your question?
It does. Thank you. Do you find that they get angry with the whole trapping situation, or do they generally understand what you're trying to do?
It depends on the individual. I've experienced both.
Okay.
So what you can do, and again, I'm going to talk about sending information clearly in a minute, but you can send the information to, if you're working with a particular colony, what your intentions are, and you can send them the pictures of the traps, and you can send them the picture of what is going to happen and that they will return home. That can be really helpful to give them a heads up, give them a sense of control over the situation, and also really make it clear that you are wanting to help and not harm. And I don't know, you're probably familiar with this resource already, but for anybody who's not, there's a wonderful organization called LA Cat Allies, and I believe that their website is lacatallies.org, but you can Google them, and they have a tremendous wealth of information about feral cat TNR programs, how best to implement them, how best to go about trapping, how to find a vet to work with you who's really skilled in working with feral cats, and they're a wonderful resource. Definitely letting the cats know ahead of time what the plan is can be really, really helpful.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for that question.
Excuse me. Anybody else have a question they want to ask right now? Please press *6 and unmute your line. Okay. Nancy, I was just going to ask you whether you teach animal communication classes, right?
I do. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you have any feral cats who participate as teachers in your program?
Wow, that's a great question. I have not to this point. Although one of my own animal family members, my cat Maddie, actually came into my life through the feral cat program.
Mm-hmm.
And he is not a feral cat, and that really wasn't. He was a stray who ended up in one of our traps, although he definitely had some clear feelings that he expressed to me for a long time about that whole experience. But he helped me, but in terms of having other ferals help me, I have not, but I think it's a wonderful idea.
I raise this because I have I call her semi-feral, because she will make eye contact and so on. I have a cat living in my backyard. And recently I asked her to participate in a program that I was teaching over the phone and through the internet. And to my amazement, she agreed to do this and communicated telepathically with people. And I saw big changes in her. And members of a program who spoke with her several times felt that her change, her energy and her openness to communication changed through the course of that. And so it occurred to me as you were talking about this that might be something to consider doing. And then people would have a better understanding of, obviously it would be good to have some different individuals with different perspectives.
Yeah.
If possible. But anyway, I don't want to hog this. Does anybody else have a question? Because if not, I think we should let Nancy continue with her program. Okay, Nancy, why don't you just go ahead?
All right. Yeah, thank you for that. Thank you for that story, Netta, because I think that's just fantastic. And it kind of gets back to, again, not assuming anything, not assuming that an animal is static or fixed or that their situation is going to stay the same. You know, your semi-feral cat, who knows what her journey is with this and her evolution with your students. I mean, it's fantastic, and when we were talking with the woman who asked the feral cat question, I started to talk about the next tool, which is that seems quite obvious in of classes dedicated to exploring topics about animal communication, but I want to mention it anyway, and that is to learn to send telepathic information clearly and learn to receive telepathic communication. And I know many of you on this call are at various stages in that process, from being students to being professionals. So, but for those of you who may just be starting out and really just dipping your feet into this wonderful world of telepathic communication, learning to send responsibly to animals can be practiced right away. And you can start this with whatever animals you're working with right now. Start with simple things and assume that the animals can and do understand you, whether or not you're confident about your ability to understand them. Assume that they can hear you. And so, for example, if you are working in a rescue situation where you need to let them know what's going on, you can tell them what's happening. You can ask for their cooperation. You can send them pictures of, whatever it is that you might like their cooperation with, their help. You can prepare them. Sometimes, especially when people are beginning, when you're learning how to send information, talking aloud to an animal can be really helpful. Our brains form the pictures, and our bodies carry the emotions of what we're communicating when we speak aloud. And as long as you stay really responsible within yourself and make sure that your feelings and what you're sending to them are matching what you're saying to them, it can be a really, really helpful way to send information in a way that they can get very quickly and clearly. It could be something as simple, say you're working in a shelter of you have to take a cat to the vet, and you know that this cat is particularly fearful about going in the carrier. Just explain to her beforehand, we're gonna have to take you to the vet, and here's the carrier, and in a little while I'm going to pick you up and then put you in, and I'd really like you to cooperate with me on this. Whatever it is that you need, give her the picture, give her the heads up. So often animals, particularly if they have been traumatized in any way, are used to humans coming at them, doing things, putting their energy on them, doing things to them, even if it's with the most helpful intentions. And so if we can sit back and give the animal the heads up and the willingness and the opportunity to actually be a participant, it can create tremendous change, just that simple tool. And obviously, if you are interested in learning to receive telepathic communication clearly, there are now so many resources available to you, people all over the world who are teaching in-person courses. There's teleclasses, there's forums like this, there are just many, many wonderful resources, books, internet sites, all of that. So if it's something that you are just beginning and you want some help with, those resources are available. And I also mentioned a little bit earlier in the call, and I'd like to say a little bit more about this now for those of you especially who may be newer to this, that there are some other kind of what I consider additional skills that can be really helpful in addition to telepathic communication that are really wonderful for people and animals in rescue situations particularly, but really in any situation. Many of you may be familiar with Reiki. Reiki is an energy healing tool that can be used either in person or long distance. It's not affiliated with any particular religious tradition. It can be used by anyone in pretty much any situation once you have been attuned to the energy, and that usually happens through some kind of a course. And there are many people now who are teaching Reiki with particular emphasis on using it with animals. I'm one of them, and I have many colleagues who are doing that as well. Reiki, if you're working in any kind of shelter or rescue, I really recommend that you explore that if it feels right for you, taking at least a level one or a level one and two Reiki course. It will help you with your own ability to not only do your own healing, but also to stay centered and calm in terms of in times of crisis. It can also be used with animals. Animals tend to eat it up. They love it. It can be used without touching the animal, so it can be very helpful, for example, with animals who are wild or feral or for whatever reason don't want to be touched. If you would like more information on that, there's a lot of resources. You can email me after the course and I can put you in touch with some of that. Any kind of supportive body work, Tellington touch, other kinds of things, very, very helpful. If you are drawn to learn about adjunct healing modalities, such as flower essences, that kind of thing, there's lots of resources. Many animal communicators also offer courses specifically on using flower essences with animals, and use them a lot in my work, and I find them tremendously helpful for myself and for the animals. Any kind of what I consider, I call them whole animal training methods, you know, training methods that that address the animal as a whole being. And so those are just some other skills and some resources that can be really, really helpful. There are many animal communicators who have information and resources that are specific to rescue and shelter workers and animals. One in particular that I would like to mention is Teresa Wagner's CD on, I can't remember the exact title letter at the moment, but it's Teresa Wagner is also on the Animal Communicator Forum page. You can link to her website through that page, and she has a wonderful CD and does work specifically with folks who do rescue. I know she works a lot with people who do like animal control work and that kind of thing. So she has some wonderful resources. And there are other, we have many colleagues who have either their own nonprofit rescue shelters or who teach courses specifically at those kinds of facilities. And so if those are in your area, you may wish to check those out as well. So, Netta or anybody else, are there other questions that we can address? I have many more things that I can talk about, so I'm not by any means out of material, but let's pause for some questions again and make sure that we're staying within our time frame.
Yes, okay. Anybody have a question, please press *6 and unmute your line. And while I'm waiting for someone to do that, I'm just going to add a comment, if I may, Nancy. that I have sometimes suggested, you know, when an animal really dearly wants to find a home, that the animal, you know, that we can say to the animal, well, you can participate in this process. Think about
yes.
the kind of home you would like to have.
Yes.
So do you want to be an indoor-outdoor cat? Do you want to be indoor only? Do you want other animals in the family? Or do you want to have a person to yourself? Whatever the criteria are, and then simply suggest to the animal that they, you know, have a clear image in their mind of what they're looking for. And
mm-hmm.
then together with them, if you're communicating with them either verbally, telepathically, or even if you're not conscious that much of your telepathic part of it, or you're just learning, you can simply, you know, suggest to them, okay, so now you can manifest in your world, just like we manifest in our world, what it is you're looking for. And it really creates a powerful connection. The animal knows that you're aligned with what it is they want, even if you don't even have to know the details. You can just say, okay, you focus on it, and I will, you know, send a little energy or hold an intention to boost your power to call to you the perfect family for you.
Yes.
And I think we could get a lot more animals out of rescue situations and into homes if we were reminding them, because if they have been traumatized just by the event of ending up in a shelter, never mind by all the other possible reasons of how they got there,
mm-hmm.
this would help them connect with where they're supposed to be.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree, Netta, and I've experienced that really many, many times in my work. And, you know, the example I just shared about the kitty whose person was killed, and, you know, she was very clear about what she wanted. She showed a picture. She wanted a couple. She wanted them to be older. She wanted them to be stable in every way. She wanted to just hang out with them and be able to give them her love and her support, and she was fine with being inside, and that's what she wanted. She wanted a stable life. Her life up until that point was pretty chaotic, even though she really deeply cared for her former person. And she, and, you know, within 2 weeks she had manifested that. She pulled that, you know, she had pulled those people in. And I've seen that happen over and over again. And also I've seen the confidence that it can build for animals, particularly animals who may not ever have had a person ask them, well, what do you want? What do you need?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody says, what's your perfect situation? What's your perfect family? And they go, oh, wow, like I have a choice in this, you know? And then it starts to empower them, and that it also can really help them to heal from whatever their past may be, because they go, wow, you know, I have a stake, and I have some control over choosing what my situation is from here. So, yeah, and I know that a lot of animal communicators who do volunteer work with shelters, you know, they will do that kind of thing, you know, and will help the animal express, this is what I'm looking for, you know. Boy, I really want someone to run on the beach with me and play ball, you know, you know, or whatever it might be. Yeah.
Again, let me just remind everybody, *6 would unmute your line if you have a question or comment. And while we're waiting, I might just say that it's not, I know that people think of shelters as terrible places, and nobody wants to see any animals in shelters. But sometimes animals have kind of a higher purpose for having certain types of experiences.
Yes, yes.
And if we focus on that rather than seeing these kinds of situations so negatively, I think that will help animals as well. In other words, if we
yes.
remember to recognize and honor the fact that they have a life path, and this isn't all just by happenstance necessarily,
yes.
Or maybe even at all, but you know, this is part of their soul's process.
Yes.
And maybe that will help us and them.
Yes. Yeah, I couldn't agree more, and I tell you that animals teach me this over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm thinking again of my dog Trixie. You know, for those of you who haven't read that story on the website,
mm-hmm.
Trixie spent 7 years of her life in a research lab. Not a situation that any of us, by any stretch of imagination, would ever want to have, you know, anybody go through. And it was many, many years after her death that I finally, she helped me to understand the full meaning of that experience. It came in waves of understanding over years. You know, you can read that story, but really understanding that animals have their own spiritual journeys. They have their own purposes. We may or may not ever be able to know or understand that. Sometimes animals have an awareness of it, and they can tell you. They can say, I'm in this situation because it may be I'm in this, you know, situation because I have a particular piece of work to do with a person here. Or, you know, I'm a willing participant in this situation because of this relationship. They may not be aware in all moments or able to communicate or express that to us, but also to leave the possibility open that understanding may unfold over time, or it may not. You know, we don't know. But we also have, you know, find in our as humans, and particularly those of us who love animals and feel deeply connected to them, we have the feeling oftentimes that all suffering is bad and should be avoided or prevented at all costs. And I think some of the conflict that we find ourselves in as people is that we can't prevent or avoid suffering in our own lives or for those we love. And there is a tremendous amount of suffering that animals endure in our world, as do humans and many, many other species. You know, plants and rock, you know, the earth, all of that. And so, you know, in that kind of thing, I also find the concept of the wounded healer to be really helpful, because, you know, as many people know, sometimes our wounds can also be, down the road, our greatest blessings in terms of the understandings and the insights that they give us. And sometimes, very often, there is a higher purpose and a positive result. And I've had the opportunity to travel in parts of the world where there are a lot of homeless street dogs. And when I first started meeting the street dogs, it was upsetting to me because they're often in very poor health. They're often starving. They often, you know, have terrible problems with parasites and all kinds of things, and often endure a lot of abuse. And when I started having the courage to ask the street dogs about their life and their perception, what I heard from so many of them was that they were doing a tremendous service for people and for the planet by helping people to awaken their hearts of compassion. Mm-hmm. And I went, wow, okay, so you're undergoing this tremendously difficult physical experience, but you're aware of your higher purpose. And, you know, and so, boy, it just, it's a tremendous learning. The animals, you know, they never cease to amaze me.
You know, again, I want to encourage people to ask questions and make comments. Star 6 will unmute your phone. And while I'm waiting for someone to unmute their line, as I'm listening to what you've just been saying, Nancy, I just suddenly became very aware of this contrast, which is that on the one hand, there are animals who are so aware of their life purpose. They know what they're supposed to be doing. They know what their service is. They're focused on that. And then there are the other ones who seem not to really know.
Mm-hmm.
Who kind of need a little help or a little support or a little planting of a seed of thought that they
yes.
can align with their purpose and they
yes.
can remember it. And
yeah.
so just like humanity, there are some parts of humanity right now that are very awake and aware, and then there's the vast majority, I think, that are still not awake and aware.
Mm-hmm.
And so it all goes back to what you were saying in the beginning about how we need to think of them each as individuals. So
yeah.
don't, you know, I have had clients who've assumed that, you know, my animal is my personal guide, and if I have a question about my life, I always go to my animal. And I have
right.
to think, okay, wait a minute, you know, you're supposed to go
yeah.
inside. You
do have the answers inside. And yes, this animal may be here to help you in many, many different ways at different levels of who you are as a being.
Yeah.
But it isn't always appropriate to go to your animal and ask for guidance, whether they're in a body,
yeah,
out of a body. And so, you know, I just want to suggest to people that when we assume that the animals have all the answers about their own life or about
yeah,
their life, or have none of the answers, I mean, either one of those extremes is not appropriate. What's
yeah,
appropriate is to say to an individual animal, okay, do you know what your purpose is?
Right.
Would you like some help with that? Or do you need some help figuring it out?
Mm-hmm.
Or
exactly.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not
yeah,
to make, we tend to make a lot of assumptions, and it's so important that we stop making those assumptions.
Yeah. And, you know, I couldn't agree with you more, Netta. And, I mean, I really believe it does just as big of a disservice to the animals to assume that they are all spiritually superior in their awareness as it is to assume that they are spiritually inferior.
Yeah.
Just like people, you know, animals have their own journeys, and they have varying levels of awareness. You know, I've talked to some animals where this is, you know, an early lifetime for them, you know, and they don't understand a lot of things, or they're working things out. And
mm-hmm,
so, you know, it can really run the gamut. And it's coming me to share just a little bit about my little dog Gypsy, who any of you who may have heard the class I did earlier this year for the Animal Spirit Network may have already heard the story, but Gypsy is a little Chihuahua mix who is nearing the ripe old age of 17. And Gypsy, for most of her life, I would say, did not have a big awareness of her spiritual self, her spiritual purpose, her spiritual journey. And she experienced early trauma before I adopted her that really stayed lodged with her despite a lot of communication and healing work for many, many, many years. It's just now, as she is entering her elder years, I would say within the last year or two, but really making a tremendous leap forward in the last literally 4 months, where Gypsy is understanding you know, those things on a deeper mm-hmm, level. And she's experienced now, she has some spirit world helpers, angels and fairies and other beings who are teaching her and helping her. She's had some tremendous journeys and experiences with them, and she is just now, you know, as she's becoming an old lady, healing from the trauma that she experienced, you know, 15 years ago. And so, you know, exactly what you're saying, we just ask each individual and we let them show us, we let them teach us.
Nancy, I hate to say this, but we're out of time.
Wow, that went fast.
I tell you, it's amazing how quickly this hour goes. Nancy, do you have any announcements to make, any courses coming up or things that you're going to be doing or any offers that you want to make to the folks on the phone today?
Sure, yeah. First of all, I'd just like to let you know that you can visit my website for more information and also to contact me. And that web address is communicatewithyouranimals.com. And I'm actually working on my fall course schedule right now, so that will be posted on my website hopefully shortly. We'll see, hopefully within the next week or two. Also, I had put out that I would do a special offer for anyone who's joining live on the call today, that if you would like to book a private consultation with me, I will give you 10% off of my fees for that. So you can contact me through my website if you're interested in that. And
and they should give that they were on the call or something that so that you know who it is.
Just put ACF in the subject line and then I'll know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else to announce?
Let's see. It seems like I am forgetting something, but it's not coming to me right now. So if you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to discuss those with you. I know Annette is going to be talking about the blog.
Right.
The blog, yeah.
Right now.
Okay.
Thank you, Nancy, so much for this
amazing and insightful and informative program. Nancy's blog will be available shortly after we all get off the phone here. She'll be available for 2 days to answer more questions. If you care to share any of your experiences with rescued animals, please put them in the blog as well. And you need to sign into the forum in order to blog, so please do that. The recording of this call will be available later this evening, fingers crossed, but that's my intention. I usually get it up the same day. To get to the recording, you go to the recordings drop-down menu for the year 2010, and it will be listed under July with Nancy's name right there. If you're not on the mailing list, please get on the mailing list for the Animal Communicator Forum. I invite you all to ask questions for the Owl's Corner, and I apologize. It just dawned on me about a day or so ago that I haven't put up a July question, so I'm going to do that. But anybody can send questions in at any time for consideration for the Owl's Corner. And the goal there is that animal communicator professionals are invited to respond to the questions so that you will be provided with some of the wisdom of their experience. Our August speaker, I can't believe August is almost here. On August 18th, Donna Lazito will be speaking on energy, animal communication, and homeopathy. Homeopathy is a dynamic and powerful energetic healing system that is effective for both humans and animals. Some of you may be familiar with it, others of you may not, but Donna is trained in homeopathy and will be giving us an informative and helpful presentation. I'm still scheduling 15-minute free body scans, and I will probably be scheduling them for quite a while out into the future. But if you want to get on the list, you can send an email to me. My email address is netaw@sbcglobal.net, and that's available on the AC Forum website, too, so it should be easy to find if you want to get onto that. I am planning to offer the TWA Telepathy with Animals Animal Communication Coaching Program this September, so if you're on the mailing list, you will hear about that coming up. More information will be available in August. It's a 12-week program. This is for deepening and strengthening and expanding your telepathic skills with animals. And as always, Violet and Sakara, my two felines, one is my supervisor and the other says she's my assistant. I think they both run this place. Want me to remind you that the free special report, 11 Keys to Creating a Win-Win with Your Animals, is available when you subscribe to the mailing list at raysofhealinglight.com. which will then be followed up with mailings exploring each one of those keys in more depth. So, Nancy, I thank you and thank you and thank you for this excellent program today. And I thank each and every one of you who came on the call today and those of you who will be listening to the recording. Thank you for supporting the Animal Communicator Forum and for learning about animal communication and getting the word out to everyone you know that animals are sentient beings and they have thoughts and feelings and knowledge and messages, insight and wisdom and consciousness. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.